And welcome back to Cottage Talk. I am Russ Goldman, a co-host, and with me today will be Guy Rofe and Brendan Cronin. This is another episode of the FFC Weekly Roundup, and in this episode, we're going to be previewing the upcoming FA Cup match for Fulham against Hull City at Craven Cottage this Sunday. However, we're going to start by looking back at the 1-0 loss for Fulham against Reading. Later on, we will also be talking about a couple topics in the Cottage Talk Roundtable. We have much to get through, but before we do anything, I have to welcome my co-host back to the show first. Guy, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Russ. Not doing too bad. Obviously, Fulham is, I don't want to call it a rough patch, but you know, we haven't been as good as we've come to expect. It's going to be interesting to talk about it. I'm looking forward to it.
I'm looking forward to it as well, Guy. You were at the Reading match, and I'll be leaning on you for your expertise, breaking that down in just a bit. Let me now bring Brendan back on the show. Brendan, how you doing, my friend?
Hey, Russ, how are you?
I am well. Welcome back to the show, my friend. Are you looking forward to talking some Fulham now?
Thank you. Yeah, it's good to be back on. Definitely am. Obviously, there's lots of pressure in the championship at the moment, so I'm looking forward to the break for the weekend, and looking forward to hopefully a victory in the cup on Sunday and a bit of a cup run, hopefully.
Okay, very good there, my friend. All right, like I mentioned, we're going to start by talking about the Reading match. I'm going to be leaning on Guy, but I'll also be getting your thoughts as well, just about the result, my friend. But I'm going to start with Guy. Just give me your overall thoughts about what you watched at the Medeski the other night.
The whole match, it wasn't pretty. It was bad. It was bad, just bad football. We didn't perform well. I don't think Reading were any better than us at all. But, you know, as far as they're concerned, they got the result, and that's all that matters. We can talk about the pitch if we want.
Sure.
What is it? We're going to get these types of pitches and these types of grounds and atmospheres in the championship and in any league as well. So, you know, you'd think we'd be able to work around that, and you'd think we'd have the quality to get past that. Again, we were pretty much as bad as ourselves, as bad as each other. And it was a penalty. That was the difference, really. You know, even then Button saved it. I'm not sure if the defense could have done much about it, but that's been the deciding factor.
Okay, right back to you. Let's talk a little bit about the pitch. I don't want to use it as this excuse, okay? But it was bad. I watched the replay. It was bad. My thoughts on this is what you just said. If you see the pitch the way it is, you kind of have to adjust how you play a little bit. You know, you have to be a little bit more careful with your passing, knowing that you just can't expect it to be where it's going to be because the pitch won't allow it, you know, the conditions. So I understand that it definitely was a factor. You could just see the way that the match was being played. But for me, Guy, this had more to do with how Reading set themselves up. They had a game plan, and they were going to stymie us, and that's exactly what they did. Basically, like you said, both teams seemed to equal each other out, and then it really just came down to who could convert on a penalty.
Well, technically, they didn't convert either, but you know, it's just the whole set.
This is true.
It's set pieces, I guess.
This is true.
You know, David Button's made a save, the second penalty he saved this season. But again, just like the Birmingham match, we gave away another penalty and they scored that. You know, we're conceding in almost like typical standards for us. You know, it's just ridiculous. And obviously, our penalty record this season is a piss take at this point to me.
Right. Look,
we've scored 2 out of 9. Chris Martin has scored 1 out of 4. I'm not saying, you know, get rid of him or that. I'm not jumping the gun, but it's an obvious problem that needs to be addressed, because I heard something, you know, if we'd have scored our penalties, we could have been, you know, about third or something by now. I don't know. You know, they've been game-changing moments. We dropped 5 points to QPR thanks to penalties. And at Reading, we dropped 3 points or 1 point at least. So it's definitely an issue that we can't take lightly.
Now, listen, I'm right there with you, my friend, and very, very interesting thoughts by you overall about the match. I'm going to bring Brendan back on right now. And Brendan, back over to you. I just want to get your thoughts on just overall on this result. Obviously, Fulham go down 1-0. Thoughts on this match at Reading?
Really disappointed. Probably the most disappointed I've been at any result this year. I was training my own guys on Tuesday, so I only got to listen to the last half hour, and you know, it was just really disappointing. You know, it was our game in hand. I think the disappointment really, Russ, goes back to the first game when we played so well and the game was called off due to the fog. And, you know, we're probably going through a little bit of bad phase at the moment and just didn't play our football, you know, and it would have been a great opportunity to get the 3 points and move into seventh and would have put us in a nice position, you know. So overall, very disappointed. I was lucky enough to be at the home game in December when we beat them 5-0 and convincingly beat them. We were, you know, so good, but we look a bit different. We look a slightly different team than we did back then, you know.
Yeah.
So just quite disappointed overall, to be honest.
Okay, very good. All right. Guy, back over to you, because now we're just going to go in and talk about the first half. But before we do that, I want to get your thoughts on the starting 11 and the first half, because there was something very interesting about the starting 11. Fulham started the match at three at the back. So I want to get your thoughts on Slavica going with that the formation, which I was in favor of. But the bigger thing is, did it work in the first half? Because he ended up changing it in the second half. So talk about the first half. You know, like you said, there's not a lot to really get into to, you know, talk about opportunities for either side, but just give me your thoughts on the starting 11 and just the overall play that you saw in the first half.
Obviously, we started, at least I got the impression, 3-5-2. Malone and Fredericks as wing backs, as per usual. I guess that would be Kenny in the middle, Martin and Aluko up front. We had it at QPR with Fredericks and Malone. Namely Fredericks. I don't feel like he got down the wing as much as he can do and has done this season. And I think against QPR, when we took him off and brought Odoi on, we got a lot more attacking. We pushed up a lot quicker and eventually we got a goal out of it. That's mainly my one concern at this point. Is Fredericks doing enough anymore? And, you know, should Odoi start in the cup or going forward? I would give him a chance if based off of the second half performance at QPR. But as for the team against Reading, I had no complaints other than Fredericks. You know, but obviously, before the game, you wouldn't expect him to carry on with that poor performance.
Okay, very good there, Guy. And you brought up something interesting, because I remember Mike Gregg, I believe he either tweeted it or he might have said this to me. I'm not sure, because I've been conversing with Mike about this. He said that he would have taken off, instead of changing the formation, he would have taken off the wingbacks, changed the wingbacks at half, and stuck with the formation. He said the formation wasn't the problem. It had more to do with the players. And it sounds like, based on what you're talking about with Ryan Fredericks, you're kind of on the same wavelength. I don't know if you would have stuck with the formation. Maybe you would have taken off Ryan Fredericks and possibly Malone. I want to get your thoughts on that. Do you think the problem was the wingbacks here?
Well, I'll go at it as if it was FIFA. In a FIFA match, if I'm playing with a certain formation and I don't get, you know, a feeling of, you know, I'm getting somewhere with it with the specific formation, I would usually change the formation at some point in the game, right? At half time, like Mike was saying, you know, he would stick with the formation. I didn't really get a feeling of anything at all in the first half from either team. You know, it was boring almost. But you know, it's definitely a good thing to look at in hindsight. You know, the game could have played out so differently if you'd have taken off the fullbacks and stuck with the current formation. But obviously, if we change the formation, the whole team's got to adjust to it.
Right, right. And he, you know, and now that's going to help us transition to the second half, because he does change the formation. And unfortunately for Fulham, you know, we're now going to be talking about the penalty. I want your thoughts on the penalty. Fairly corrected me. They didn't convert on a penalty. It was the rebound that they converted on. You're right about that. But I want to get your thoughts on the situation with Ream. Do you think it was a penalty? And then, of course, you have the play going on throughout the second half. So I just want your overall thoughts on the second half play. And then, of course, we have the situation at the end of the match. I believe it was the 89th minute. You have the penalty caused by a foul on Piazon. And unfortunately, once again, we have problems taking a penalty. And Chris Martin, his penalty is saved once again. And Fulham end up losing this match 1-0. But I want to get your overall thoughts on the second half, but definitely thoughts on these two situations. And then, of course, the change of formation.
With their penalty, like I said off air, I had a good view of it. It was right in front of our fans. From watching the highlights, it almost seemed like an American football or rugby tackle in the sense that they've both gone down. But from the highlights, you know, the view that the camera had, they've kind of just collided and bounced off of each other. Whether Ream pushed him or not, I have no idea. Obviously, it's been given, and that's all that matters to them. And again, with our penalty, like we mentioned off air, could this be, you know, the ref trying to even the game out? He gave them a soft penalty. Does he want to, you know, try and give us a chance to get level? Unfortunately, if that was the case, and we didn't take our chance, but you know, this has been the story of our season. We can't put away penalties for some reason. The second half as a whole, very much like the first, in my opinion. You know, I didn't really get a feel of anything going anywhere, really. We had a few other chances that I could see from the other end. A few that I definitely think we should have put away. I think one from Chris Martin that was a sitter, if I've got it right. It's like he played it along from the wing and he put it over. But other than that, it was really just a boring game and one I couldn't take a lot away from.
Okay, very good. I want to also mention the halftime substitution coming on for the second half, because this involves the changing of the formation. You have Lucas Piazon coming on for Michael Maddle. So that allowed Savisa to change the formation back to the 4-2-3-1. Did that help at all in your feeling there, Guy? Did we play better once we made that change at the half? I know we gave up the penalty. Forget about that. Just throughout the second half. Or is this more of the same and it's just two teams equaling each other out?
Well, Maddle got a knock, or, you know, he had to have medical treatment early in the first half. So whether or not that played a part in the halftime substitution, I would assume it did.
Okay.
But the team as a whole, again, to me, I didn't see a significant change. Sky's got us starting, at least, you know, they have us at a 3-4-2-1. And that's a formation I haven't seen us use at all this year. We'll talk about whether or not we have a plan B later in the show.
Yep.
To me, our plan B would be the 3-5-2. You know, we would start at a 4-2-3-1, and if a change was needed, then we'd switch to 3-5-2. You know, at Ipswich it worked. He bought off a Luko, bought on Sigurdsson. Sigurdsson killed the game off. But it didn't change anything significantly. I feel like Piazon had a poor game, just like a lot of our players as well. Didn't have the impact that I would have hoped he would have had against his old team.
Okay, very good. Very disappointing loss. And I watched it and it was a little painful there, Guy. Obviously much more painful for you being there, but it was difficult because I could just see that these were two teams that were just basically just going back and forth, and there was no flow, like you said. I think that's the big thing that I got out of it. No flow at all with either team. And I think that also had something to do with how Reading set themselves up, how Yapstam set his team up. You know, he wanted to frustrate us. He obviously got that across to his players. there was a good amount of time wasting. I saw that. I heard it on the broadcast, but I actually saw it as well. There really was. So there was a game plan to slow things down, and it worked. You know, it ends up working because they end up getting the result, and it's unfortunate for Fulham. All right, Guy, real quick, I'm just going to give you the full-time stats. I want to get your thoughts on them, and then I'll bring Brendan on, and then we'll move on from this match because I think they back up exactly everything that you've been talking about here. So here are the full-time stats. Possession, 54% to 46% in favor of Fulham. Total shots, 17 to 14 in favor of Reading. On target, Reading had 7. Fulham only had 2 on target. Corners were even at 5. Crosses, Fulham were ahead here, 26 to 16. Tackles, 23 to 14 in favor of Reading. Attempted passes, 386 for Reading, 439 for Fulham. Attacking passes, 198 to 73 in favor of Fulham. That's a stat that actually stands out to me. Passing accuracy, this is usually higher for Fulham. They're at 75%, whereas Reading were at 73%. Accurate passes, 333 to 283 in favor of Fulham. Aerial duels in favor of Reading, 22 to 17. Fouls in favor of Fulham, 12 to 10. All right, my friend, what stands out to you from the full-time stats? Do they tell you the story of this match that you watched?
I did look at the stats, you know, right after the game and on the coach back. And I honestly, I couldn't tell you how, you know, I couldn't pick out each of our 14 shots at each moment. You know, I honestly have no idea where our 14 shots came from.
That's interesting.
Yeah, and even then, if we had 14 shots, you'd want at least half of them, 7, to be on target. You know, we definitely weren't as clinical as we should be. Whether or not we're clinical anyway is another discussion. You know, I've heard people saying, you know, we pass it too much or we don't shoot enough. You know, and I agree with the notion that we don't shoot enough, especially against QPR. We just kept on passing it aside, passing it backwards, everything like that. But again, with QPR's game plan and Reading's game plan, maybe that's what we were forced to do. No, it's definitely the shots and the shots on target specifically, because I had no idea we had that many shots. It was that shows how much attention I was paying in the game when I couldn't even remember 2 shots, let alone 14. It's honestly dire.
Okay, very good. All right. Yeah. All right, guys, just for time's sake, we're going to move on from this. I'm going to bring Brendan back on because I want to get into some interesting discussions in regards to the transfer window. So, Brendan, I'm going to bring you back on. Let's start here, my friend. Let's start with Stephen Humphreys has now gone on loan to Shrewsbury Town. But he's also signed a contract extension until the summer of 2019. I think that's a major part of this. What are your thoughts about this situation with Stephen Humphreys? I'm glad that he signed this extension, my friend.
Yeah, it's great news, Russ. Fulham were in Cork for preseason last summer, and he was the one player that really stood for me. He started all the 3 games, and in person, he just looks like an athlete. Big, strong guy, great touch. Looks like a really good finisher. You know, I think he's going to be a big prospect for us. And given our the last couple of years we've let a lot of young players go, you know, and we haven't got reasonable money for them. So it's just great for us to actually see us sign, you know, a prospect up for a couple of years. Disappointed slightly that he's going to Shrewsbury, but given that he's gone to Shrewsbury probably means that we're going to bring in another striker. And, you know, it will give him some well-needed game time for the rest of the season. Hopefully he'll score a few goals. I think Shrewsbury is a good club. They've had Jack Grimmer the last 2 years, and he's done quite well down there. So I think it's a good level for him. Really happy overall. I think I'm happy enough. As long as we bring in someone to replace him.
Right, and I'm there with you. But I think for his development, I definitely like the move. But when I saw that there was a contract extension attached to this, that to me was the part, okay, this is the right thing to do here. Send him out on loan. I know he's been playing in Premier League 2 and playing very well, but why not send him to another club and experience something different and work on his game? Because this is about working on his game. And I think this is the right thing to do for like you said, a young player. I think this is the right move. Guy, your thoughts on this?
Yeah, it's definitely the right move, especially to get him on the deal. you know, it definitely shows that we do have plans for him in the future. And
absolutely,
a move down to League One, just getting more playing time, more experience, hopefully rough him up a bit more in a cutthroat league. And it's definitely the right thing to do for such a young player. You know, he's not going to get the feel of a game if he's constantly with the under-23s. You know, there's so many other aspects to a match that he'd have to get used to through his development and as he gets older. You know, I remember there was an interview with Bettinelli about, and he was talking about how he was finding it to cope with the crowd, you know, just to play in front of a stadium, in front of thousands of people. That was something he had to adjust to.
Right.
And it's definitely good for Stephen Humphreys to get some time and some experience, albeit in League One.
Very good there, my friend. And that's why I wanted to start by talking about that, because I think this is important for a young player. Like you said, Premier League 2, you know, the pressure, it's different than actually being in a match in one of the lower leagues. That's why I think, you know, with a crowd behind him, I think this is good. I think this is a really good move for his development. All right, Guy, right back to you. Fulham have signed defensive midfielder Thanos Petsos from Werder Bremen on loan until the end of the season. So now they bring in another defensive midfielder, possibly to back up Kevin McDonald. Thoughts on this?
I was at my youth club when the story came through and I saw it on Instagram, and I literally just went mental. I screamed. I ran out the room. I started singing about Slavisa just for the fact that we'd actually signed the player this month. You know, I'd never heard of him. Yeah. Like a lot of people were saying, you know, who is he? But at the same time, you know, I trust Slavisa's judgment on players in Europe, so I'm prepared to give him a chance. The main joke, you know, people were asking me what I was going mental over, and I said, you know, Fulham signed the player, all of that type of stuff. I told the people who he was, and they were asking, is that a brand of pasta? You know, I know nothing about him. He's played 3 games for Werder Bremen this season. They say, was it 4 international appearances for Greece? I'm not going to hold any grudges on Greek players because of Kostas Mitroglou. I remember how good Karagounis was before him. So, you know, he's definitely a wait-and-see job for me. You know, Slavisa, again, like I said, I trust his judgment. He knows what he's doing with players in and around Europe. So it's definitely going to have to be a wait-and-see thing.
Okay, very good. I'm like you. I was just happy that they signed someone, but I'm always curious about the positions that they go after. And this was a defensive midfielder. And Brendan, I want to go to you now. Get your thoughts about the signing of this player. I actually watched the video of Petsos. Very interesting, because in it he talks about the homework Fulham did on him because they knew his playing style, and it sounds like they were prepared to bring this player in. They did their work on this player, so they have an idea of how he's going to play with him. Thoughts on this move?
Yeah, they actually wanted him last summer before he went from Rapid Vienna, I think, to Werder Bremen. So obviously they tracked him the last couple of months. It's good. I mean, we let go of 3 midfielders. I was discussing this with you today. Yep. So we kind of needed some cover, you know. If you look at our midfield, our first choice midfield is McDonald, Kearney and Johansson. For me, that's probably the best midfield in the championship. You know, maybe behind Newcastle, maybe. So, but if you got to take into account what happens if these guys get injured, if they get suspended, or even at the moment where they're probably going through a little bit of bad form, we need guys to bring on. Tony Cliff, I was a big fan of him, gave 100%, but just didn't have the football. Now, like Guy, I know very little about this guy, but from what I read online and from what he said in his interview, he seems to like to play the football and get the ball down to the ground. So I think that's why Slav was interested in him. It's a gamble, I suppose. We don't know much about it, but it's only on loan until the end of the year.
Right.
So hopefully he can make an impact, you know. And I know you said defensive midfielder there, but in the video he actually says that he can go forward as well. You know, he's not only a defensive midfielder, he can also get stuck in and play a slightly different position. So it'd be interesting to see how he gets on. And I'm hopeful that he's going to get the start on Sunday against Hull.
You know, it's interesting because Savica did talk about him in his presser. You know, sounds like he might be involved. I don't know how involved he's going to be mattering starting, maybe coming off the bench. I'm not sure, but I hope he is involved in this match. So I'm glad that you mentioned that, my friend. All right, right back to you. I want to go right back to you. Let's talk about what happened today. I've seen stuff on this for the last couple of days. So what are your thoughts about Colley Woodrow and Lasse Vigen Christensen both going out on loan to Burton Albion? What are your thoughts of both of these players going on? And one thing that I do want to mention is Fulham are playing Burton Albion on Wednesday. And what's kind of good about this is that both these players can't play against Fulham. So that's one of the good things. But what about both of them going to Burton Albion? Thoughts?
Okay, so given the fact that both of them aren't playing for one reason or another, it's the right decision. You know, they're going to go to Burton Albion. I believe that they actually, as bad as they are, I believe they play a good brand of football. Do I agree with LVC going? No. I'm a big fan of his. I can't believe he hasn't broken into our squad all year. There's been so many opportunities where, you know, we've used the same players over and over again. We could have brought him in off the bench. Definitely could have improved us, you know. He showed the last couple of years what kind of good player he is. So I'm disappointed over that. But look, if he's not getting a game, let's send him out to Burton. Trust Slav's judgment. For Colley, you know, I've said it before, and I don't like giving up on any player, but I just don't think he's up to it myself. I can't see him really putting on a Fulham jersey again. So I think it's a good move for him. I wish him the best of luck.
Okay.
Hopefully he'll improve himself. But, you know, LVC, I'm disappointed about Colley, not so much.
Okay. And I do understand that, my friend. All right, I'm going to put you on hold there for just a second. Guy, back over to you. Thoughts on both of these players going on loan to Burton Albion? I actually agree with everything that Brendan had to say. I'm disappointed in the fact that Lasse Vigen Christensen is going out on loan because I think that Savica could use him. I still believe it. I don't understand why he has not been used more. I think he's a valuable player, and for whatever reason, he's not favored by Savica Jokanović. So I understand why he's leaving. I'm just disappointed by it. Colley Woodrow, just like what Brendan said, I don't think he's a championship striker. I think he's a League One striker. So for him, I think this is good for him. Thoughts on both of these players going out on loan?
With Christensen, I think it's the right move. And with Woodrow, definitely, he definitely needs to let loose. So he needs to get games. Both of them need to get games. Nigel Clough said how we still have long-term plans for Christensen. And if that's the case, then that's great. And we can, you know, he can hopefully find his feet, improve himself since his injury, and come back next season better, ready to fight for a place in the first team. With Woodrow, he just hasn't done it this season or even the years before. He is very much just in the back, you know, bottom of the pecking order, under 23s, just not getting a look in. He's also one of the players that missed the penalty this season against Bristol. So I don't think that helped his case in the first team as well. No coincidence to me that he ran the show against the League Two team, Leyton Orient. You know, that would be his level. You know, League One would be his level, in my opinion. I don't think he's physical enough or aggressive enough to cut it in the Championship. And Christensen, we know the quality he's got. We've seen it firsthand. You know, he broke into the first team. I think he got our third best player of the year behind McCormack and Bettinelli our first year in the Championship. And he can do great things. It's just whether or not he can find that form again since his injury. Because since that injury, he hasn't been able to perform as well. And he hasn't been able to solidify a place in the first team.
Okay, very good. Very interesting analysis by both of you on these two players, and I wish them both the best at Burton Albion. I hope it works out for both of them, and you know, I keep going back to this with Colley Woodrow. I'm glad that you said that as well. You know, the match that he shined, you know, I mean, that tells you where his level is, where I think his level is. I think his level is, is in a lower league, I could say it's League One. I think he'd be fine down there. I don't think he's good enough for the championship. I'm sorry. I just don't. All right, guys, let's move on. I have a couple topics that were brought to me from Emilio Dinello, and I thought I would bring them to you. So we're going to enter the Cottage Talk roundtable, and we're going to discuss them. And, Guy, I'm going to talk to you. We've already talked a little bit about this, but the one thing that Emilio has been talking to me about is, do Fulham really have a plan B? Do they have a plan B, a way to change a match? You know, you could say a plan B could be putting on a certain player, changing a formation. You've already said you think the plan B is actually changing the formation to a 3-5-2. So let's work off that.
Yeah, that was the impression I got with just the way that we've been performing before. You know, against Burton, against Ipswich.
Yeah, it worked.
You know, we bought off Aluko, we bought on Sigurdsson, and it worked. You know, even games before that, we had changed to 3-5-2. And whether or not change the game, I don't know. Specific players, we can talk about Matt Smith all day. You know, he hasn't been getting off the bench for whatever reason. And when he has come on the bench, I think it's been far too late for him to make a significant impact on the game.
That's a great point. That's a great point, because we always have been talking about, since Fulham have had Matt Smith, that he's the plan B. But the thing about it is, the plan B should have enough time to have an impact. And I agree with you. When he's come on lately, I don't think he's given enough time to really have an impact. But he could be an impact player. But, Guy, I want to go back to you, because this is something that I'm going to bring up to Brendan when we talk a little bit more about a plan B. Do they have the right players, impact subs, to change a game? You know, other teams have this. I can go back to that Middlesbrough match a couple years ago where Aitor Karanka made three changes in the middle of the second half, and it completely changed the game. Aite's coming back. And then, of course, Niskanen's Cabana will be coming back at some time. Hopefully, we're getting in another player or two. But could that be something that, hopefully, an addition or two in the transfer window, we only have a few more days, that could help with that situation? But I think that's my concern. Do they have players to come to be impact subs right now? What are your thoughts on that?
I think we do have impact subs. It's just that we don't use them effectively. I think Matt Smith is an impact sub. He's not going to get ahead of Chris Martin just on the basis that Chris Martin has something he doesn't. Chris Martin can hold the ball up and play it efficiently between the midfield. You know, Chris Martin can use his feet as well as his head. He can do things that Matt Smith can't. At the same time, if we want to, you know, get a last-minute equaliser or something, play long ball up to a big man, who's better than Matt Smith for that?
He can do that. Yeah.
With the other subs that we would use, I mentioned Odoi recently, you know, earlier. At least against QPR and against Reading, when we took him off for Fredericks, we attacked more. We got a lot more fast-paced. You know, we got down the wing a lot more. I don't know if it's just a sour patch for Fredericks, because usually he's doing that a lot of the time as well. You know, last year away to Reading, he won us a penalty that got us an equaliser. We scored that last year as well. But I do think we have impact subs. I do think we have players on our bench that can change a game. It's just how we use them that matters. And I feel sorry for Cabano, because he seemingly has the quality to change a game. At least, you know, before we got him watching videos, and especially on his debut, he gave us a good performance. And I definitely think he's got that in his locker. You know, he scored for the Congo. You know, you saw how much that meant to him. He's doing a backflip and gone mental. That's going to do wonders for his confidence. A good run in Africa, even better for him. Obviously, Aite is coming back. That's great for us. And it's no coincidence that when Aite got injured in August. We had a bad September. You know, not just Kalas, but Aiyute.
It's a great point.
He is a focal point in our team. He is one of the players that we can't do without. And we are lacking something without him. And I think you mentioned off air, Johansson seems to work well with him.
He does.
And you know, he hasn't had that since he's been in Africa. I mentioned, you know, when you brought that up, Danny Drinkwater and Jamie Vardy, when at least last year, Jamie Vardy would get on the shoulder of the last man, Danny Drinkwater would pick him out. You know, it's just chemistry between them. They knew what they were doing. They had a plan between them, and it worked perfectly. And obviously in the Euros, when Roy Hodgson didn't take Danny Drinkwater, we all went mental and we suffered for that. I do think that we have impact subs. It's okay. Just we're not using them efficiently.
Got it. Okay, I'm going to bring Brendan back on. And Brendan, I want to get your thoughts on the plan B. I'm glad that Guy brought up the point about Aiyute. Him and I were talking about off air that we focused so much on when Kalas was out, how Fulham suffered. They also suffered when Aiyute was out. I think we're suffering again without him. So having him back is a big plus. But I also wanted to bring up getting Cabano back and seeing more of Cabano, I think, could be key in the second half of the season. We've only seen a little bit of him, but I think he has the potential to be, like I'm talking about, this impact sub. But I want to get your thoughts about everything we're talking about having a real plan B. When things aren't going right, does Savica have the tools to change things? Guy mentioned changing the formation. That's a great one because he did that in the Ipswich Town match and it worked. Does he have the impact subs right now to make the changes? He will have one back soon with Cabano. But I want to get your thoughts on that. Also, Guy brought up the fact that if he's going to bring on Matt Smith, maybe he needs to bring him on earlier. So what are your thoughts about having a plan B?
Yeah, I agree with everything Guy has said. Right now, do we have a plan B? Not much of a one, really, you know. If you'd asked me at the start of the season, I said we would definitely have lots of plans. You know, we've let go a lot of players, and some players haven't worked out. Yes, we can change formation, but there's only so much you can do, Russ, when you only have Martin and Smith up front. You know, I keep saying it, we need more options in the striking department. We missed Aiyute badly. We missed him an awful lot in the last couple of weeks. You know,
absolutely.
He's the kind of guy that will make... He can win games for you. You know what I mean? He can surprise the defense. He can, you know, he got the tricks in his armor. He can, you know, he's got that little bit of extra skill, that kind of X factor, really. That can, you know, we saw him before he went. He scored like 3 or 4 goals in a few games. You know, he got us extra points. So he's been a massive loss. So we need him back straight away. Cabano, as you said, we haven't seen enough of him, you know, but he has to be given his chance, because for the last month or so, we seem to play the same players over and over again, regardless if they're, you know, if they're out of form, if they're tired, if they're jaded, just purely because we don't have the squad, you know what I mean?
Right.
So he has to be given his chance, and I've only seen glimpses of him. He has a lot to prove, but he definitely has the potential, and I think, you know, we need to get him back ASAP, because he's going to be very important for the second half of the season. But as I said, we need strikers up front. And I go back to the guys that we left go. I think we could have used Jozabed and LVC. You know what I mean? I can't understand why they were frozen out. I mean, as I said, we keep playing the same players over and over again. And players go to form, Russ, you know what I mean? There has to be competition within the squad. So I think we should have more options than we do. But look, we've got to trust Slav, you know, he's the man.
Yeah, I hear you, my friend. All right. All right, guys, just for time's sake, I'm going to keep the other topic for another time. It's actually a very good topic, but I just want to be able to give us a proper preview of the FA Cup match. You know, that will take us about 15 minutes. So let's get into this now. I'm going to share some information with you guys to help us with our preview, and I'm gonna start with you, Brendan, because I want to get your thoughts on Hull. I'm just gonna share just some basic information on them. I don't know if you watched them last night. I did. play against Manchester United. But I got this information from WhoScored.com, and I'm going to share it with you. And just give me your overall thoughts about Hull City coming into this match. So, strengths. They're very strong at shooting from direct free kicks. Protecting lead, they're strong. Weaknesses. Finishing scoring chances, avoiding offside, stopping opponents from creating chances, defending set pieces, avoiding fouling in dangerous areas, aerial duels, and they're very weak at defending against skillful players. Style play, attacking down the right, take long shots, playing in their own, consistent first 11, and non-aggressive. I want to also mention that there's a lot of speculation. I don't know if he's going to be still with the team when they play, but there's a lot of speculation with Robert Snodgrass. They recently lost Jake Livermore, so they are losing players.
Yeah.
They've gained some players, but they've lost some players as well. They just played last night. So just give me your overall thoughts about Hull City coming into this match. What are you expecting from them?
Okay, so the first half there, you said that they were good at direct free kicks from outside the box. Yet you can say now they were good because Snodgrass he's gone to West Ham. It's official. I saw it on Sky a while ago. You know what? A lot of people kind of underestimate them. I didn't see the game last night because I was out. But you know, they're struggling in the league. But they're a decent team. They put it up against United last night. They were very unlucky earlier in the season. You know, they went through the managerial change. But from what I've been reading, this guy Silva seems to get them playing good football. They sold two of their best players, which I just cannot understand, in Livermore and Snodgrass. It's crazy.
Yeah,
you know what I mean? For a team that's trying to stay up, I'd be so devastated if I was a Hull City fan. But at the same time, Russ, I think we're playing them at the right time.
Sure.
They played last night. I was looking at the fixtures. They're playing Man United on Wednesday at home.
Yeah.
And then they've got Liverpool away next weekend. Now, most definitely, their priority is the league. Like,
of course.
You know? So I think they're definitely going to have to rest a few players. They don't have a big squad. So I think it's definitely the right time to play us, for us to play them.
I totally agree with that. All right, Guy. Who are your key players on Sunday for Fulham?
For Fulham?
Yes.
I would go with our midfield, as usual. Kenny, he's going to play. Hopefully, we'll see a change between like Johansson and McDonald, and obviously the fullbacks. Just for the sake of resting players, if not squad rotation. It's got to be through the midfield again. I don't think Aite is going to be eligible for Sunday. It's just through the midfield again. We've got to dominate the play as usual and, you know, put in a good shift, a good performance, get our shooting boots back on. And we have beaten a Premier League team this season. We beat Middlesbrough. You know, we can do it. And again, just like Hull, you know, relegation fighting, you know, they're in a similar situation, although they have, I think they've definitely, Middlesbrough, they've found their way up in recent months. The opportunity's there. You know, I'm worried about Harry Maguire in their team more than anything. Mainly just he's a fullback. He likes to run at us. He likes to run at the team and he's not afraid to shoot. But apart from him, he is really just the only worry I have. I think they'll play like David Marshall in goal. Lazar Markovic, I'm not sure if he's going to play, but he's an interesting player. They've got some good players, and that Niasse, he's a good player as well. It's going to be interesting, but there is no reason why we can't beat them. You know, they are, like I said, rejuvenated, but it's a good time for us to play them because, like Brendan said, their priority, or at least the manager's priority, would undoubtedly be the league. And with that, I'm hoping for a weak team and a chance to take our place in the fifth round. And in the fifth round, that's when it gets interesting.
Absolutely, my friend. All right, I'm going to bring Brendan back on. And Brendan, back over to you. What do Fulham need to do to beat Hull City on Sunday?
I think we need to be a bit more aggressive for us. You know, you mentioned some stats there earlier about them tackling and winning aerial duels. You know, we probably didn't do that in the last two games against Hull, especially against QPR, when we need to fight a bit more, you know. I just think we need to play our football, our usual football, you know, get the ball down to the ground. You know, we dominate possession, but we probably need to be a bit more direct when we get into their box. The last few games there, we've been kind of like playing the Arsenal away, you know, trying to walk the ball into the goals. Sometimes you need to be a little bit more direct. But we just got to play our normal game. What's really, you know, as I said, I don't think we have the options up front to be changing formations. I think we'll probably still stick with Martin up front, you know, maybe Aluko or Piazon behind him. So just keep doing what we're doing, but try and be a bit more direct, you know. We got to stop walking the ball into the net.
Okay, very good.
Yeah.
Very good there, my friend. All right, right back to you. Let's now go to starting 11 for both of you. I'll start with you, Brennan. What would be your starting 11?
I would continue with Bettinelli in goals. I mean, Button hasn't really blown us away this year, has he? So, you know, Bettinelli played well against Cardiff. So, I'd continue with him. I would change the back four completely. I don't think it would upset our system too much or, you know, our level of play. I would play Adoy at right foot, Sessegnon at left foot, and I would bring in Sessegnon and Maddle as the two central defenders. I would play Scott Parker in midfield in his usual role. I know we said, Slav said he didn't want to go about Pestos playing a defensive midfielder. I would put him in a midfield three with Kearney and see how he gets on, you know. As he said in the interview, he's been training hard all week. It's a good game to play him in, you know. So I would play him in a three with Parker, Pestos and Kearney. I think it's important that we have Kearney in the team. And I would go with, we don't really have too many options after that. I don't think Aita is ready to play yet. Hopefully he'll be back for the Burton game on Wednesday. I would play Aluko, Piazon in their usual wing positions. And I'd play Martin up front as well in his usual position. So I'd make a few changes, but I'd, you know, stick to the same formation.
Okay, very good. All right. Guy, over to you.
Yep.
You're starting 11.
Yep. Bets in goal. I don't know if it was just me, but I felt like in the Cardiff game, Betts was a lot more calm on the ball than Button has ever been. He just picked the pass straight away. Just thought about that. But Adoy and Sessegnon on wing-backs or full-backs, 4-2-3-1, yep. Sigurdsson and Kalas in the middle. Parker and Johansson in midfield, and Kearney at number 10. Aluko on the right, Piazon on the left, and Martin in the middle.
Okay, so you're going with a fairly strong side. A couple of changes. Okay, very good there, my friend. All right. Let's wrap this thing up with getting on with predictions. I put it up on the Cotter's Talk Twitter page, and I have 177 votes. Guy. Win is at 54%, draw is at 20%, and loss is at 26%. It's time for your prediction.
3-1.
3-1. I'm assuming that's full.
Yeah, 3-1, Philip. if they do, you know, play their new signings, and if they do play well, then I could see them putting a short pass to Bettinelli or something. Just because, what's that guy, Niasse?
Yep.
He's quality, and he's got it in him. Especially if our defense is in a rough patch at the moment, I feel like that would be a place to exploit. But I definitely think, you know, if we find our form again, we'll have the quality to put a few more past them as well.
Okay, very good there. All right, Brendan, back over to you. What's your prediction?
I think it's going to be a tight game, Russ. I think we're going to win 2-1. I believe they will rest players, which will help us. I think if they come down with a full-strength team, you know, it could be a draw, given the way we're playing at the moment. But I think they're going to rest players. I think, as I said, the pressure is off us. We all would like a cup run. Jokanović takes it very serious. You know, I think he called it today an amazing cup competition or something like that.
Yeah.
I think we're going to win it, yeah. I'm quite confident about it. I'm looking forward to it.
Okay, very good. I'm going to go with Guy. I'm going to say 3-1. Great minds think alike, Guy. Just kidding.
Yay.
Because I'm not a great mind. But I'm going to agree with you. You're a great mind, and I'm going to say 3-1 to Fulham, and I'm not going to predict any kind of goal score because it just drives David Holly crazy, and I don't want to drive him crazy. So I'm just going to just leave it at that. All right. Let's go to final thoughts. Brendan, over to you first. Final thoughts before we go, my friend.
Yeah, as I said, just very much looking forward to it. I've said it 3 or 4 times now. It's a nice break from the pressure of the championship and the pressure and the expectation of everyone trying to get in the playoffs and trying to get to the Premier League. And, you know, you've got the new guy on board. I'd like to see him get a game. And Aida is coming back. And, you know, this, if we can win this, it'll bring everyone up again because we were all pretty down after the last 2 games. And hopefully we can sign a few players and lots of positivity before the game next Wednesday because I hate negativity.
Okay, I like so that, my friend. All right, Guy. Yeah. Over to you, my friend. Final thoughts before we go.
Very much an optimist, at least for this game.
That's good.
Maybe
I'm rubbing off on you, Guy.
My
optimism, I mean. My optimism rubbing off on you.
Yeah. Where is it? At least in footballing terms, I like to see, you know, glass half full. If we have got it in us to beat Hull. You know, again, we've beaten a Premier League team before this season. And in my opinion, Middlesbrough are doing something. They are a lot better than Hull at the moment. You know, we played them in August, September, whatever it was. They played a slightly weaker team. It's very much going to be the same case. And we can get out on top, you know. We have the quality. It's just finding our form again and performing to that standard consistently.
All right. Good, great show, guys. Great show, but it is time to go. For Brendan and Guy, I'm Russ Goldman. Thank you, as always, for listening to Cottage Talk.